And good morning. Yes, when I walked in the door of the radio station this morning, I saw the big box that caught my attention for the Valentine's cards. So I walked over and looked inside, and there's not one yet. I guess I better be the first one to write a Valentine's card to somebody in a nursing home. Last week, this program is called Health Essentials. Last week, I think I covered an article showing that from studies from Tel Aviv University, they showed that fish oil made it really, really difficult for cancer to grow. And so I think I read the information to you in the research. But I had a friend. I can't remember her name. It might have been Judy. Anyway, she sent me this article right here. And here's the title of the article. It comes from the, it's a case report from the journal Nutrition and Cancer 2005. So when you read something from 2005, you're thinking, 2005? That wasn't that long ago, was it? No, it wasn't. As a matter of fact, it's coming up on 18 years, right? Okay. Let me see. Here is the article. And the title is Nutritional Intervention with Omega-3 Fatty Acids in a Case of Malignant Fibrous Histiocytoma of the Lungs. Anytime that somebody does an X-ray or a CAT scan, MRI, and it shows nodules in the lungs and a mass growing, you got to think cancer. Let me just read this to you. This is just the abstract. And of course, this, I think she sent it to me on Twitter, which I'm not a member of Twitter, but she sent this to me, and I looked at all the negative comments. Oh my goodness. There's so many comments saying you're going to destroy the rest of your body if you use fish oil. Just take a deep breath and sit back and listen to this. And basically, just listen to the story. It's about a 78-year-old man, and he chooses a path that's different than chemotherapy. Just listen to this. This comes from the journal Nutritional Intervention in Cancer. We present a case of a 78-year-old man with malignant fibrous histiocytoma with multiple lesions in both lungs. Okay, you got it? He's got cancer in both lungs. Following the diagnosis, he declined conventional chemotherapy and elected nutritional intervention by increasing the intake of omega-3 fatty acids and lowering the intake of omega-6 fatty acids. So just to make sure we're on the same page, omega-3 fatty acids, guess where those come from? Comes from fish. Omega-3 fatty acids are equivalent to antifreeze in your car that keeps your engine from freezing when the temperature drops below 32. Well, Arctic cod, or fish that swim in the deep, deep cold Arctic Ocean, omega-3 fatty acid keeps everything flowing, keeps them from seizing up and turning to a block of ice. Do you know what omega-6 fatty acids are? Well, that would be, you go to the grocery store and you say, I want some heart-healthy Mazola corn oil, or I'd like some soybean oil, please, or safflower seed oil or a vegetable blend. Now, that stuff's all garbage anyway. There's nothing it can do to produce health. And so when you eat a lot of fried foods, it's fried, deep fried in omega-6 fatty acids from vegetable oils, you're just asking for trouble. Okay, back to the abstract. We estimated that he consumed 15 grams of the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids called eicosapentaenoic acid, sometimes that's called EPA for short, and docosahexaenoic acid, which is DHA. He took 15 grams a day. You could do the math on that, and if it's a 1,000 milligram capsule of fish oil, there's your answer right there. Serial computed tomography, that's a CAT scan. So they did frequent CT scans of the lungs and pulmonary X-rays. They revealed, here's the punchline, a slow and steady decrease in the size and the number of the bilateral nodules in both lungs. And it goes on to say here, he has no apparent side effects from consuming large quantities of fish oil, and he remains asymptomatic. Now, isn't that just horrible? I'm just being sarcastic. I'm joking about that. Of course that's not horrible. You know, have you ever heard the phrase, let thy food be thy medicine and thy medicine be thy food? Well, this might be one application. So, if this just works for him, you know what? The thing of it is, he's 78 years old. He probably Googled, I don't know if he did in the year 2005, that might be a little bit early for that sort of thing. Maybe some people were computer savvy, but he may have Googled, what are the side effects of chemotherapy for a 78-year-old man? And you know what the truth of it is? 78 is really, for most men, 78 is a smidgen beyond their lifespan anyway. So if you live to be 85 years old, well, that's probably a good 6-7 year bonus. Now, these last 2 years, when they do the studies on longevity in the United States, it's gone down. It's almost 3 years. I talked to a insurance salesman the other day, and he was telling me that there's a little bit of a brouhaha going on in the insurance industry because all these people are having sudden death all of a sudden, and it's unexplainable. So they may have to change the premiums on life insurance policies because they're going to have a lot more payouts. And talking to another insurance salesman yesterday, he was telling me that he expects health insurance premiums to go up. And you know why those go up? Is because people are sicker. The reason I talk about things like fish oil is because you've got to decide for yourself what you're going to do that's going to be good and wholesome and positive to take care of your health. Nobody else can do it. You've got to be your own advocate. Okay, so that's one article. I have another one right here that I found interesting. This one comes all the way back from 1998, but to me, it caught my attention, so if you will, just let me share with you what I came across from this research, okay? And as you think about this, just kind of put yourself in the shoes of the participants of the study and just ask yourself, is this something that's important to me? And of course, this is natural. It's not a pharmaceutical drug. It's not a surgery. Okay, the title of the article is basically Supplementation with 5-HTP. That stands for 5-hydroxytryptophan. It's just a nutritional supplement. Think of it as an amino acid. Causes diabetics to eat significantly less. You're probably asking the question, Dr. Morgan, what do you mean diabetes? I don't think I've ever heard of somebody having diabetes. Well, if you haven't, go to the grocery store and you will see plenty of people using the motorized carts. Most likely, everyone is a diabetic. I mean, I could be wrong, but if I miss it by a little bit, it's only by a little bit. I'm probably 99% correct. So, it was a long time ago, like over 100 years ago. You know what the occurrence of type 2 diabetes was? It was 1 per 100,000. You know what it is today? It's probably every other person in the grocery store. Well, maybe not, but it's growing. It's not going away. And so that begs the next question. If the current medical protocol is working so well at treating diabetes, why is diabetes on the increase or on the climb? You can answer that question yourself. There was a book that I purchased, and in the book, it lists satisfaction and pleasure, you know, job satisfaction among physicians. And you know which one rates the lowest as far as, oh, no, I can't stand this profession. I'm burnt out. Well, the highest burnout rate is usually among endocrinologists. And they ask the question, why is that? And the book author said that was because they're using many, many drugs, but they're not seeing much cure rate. You know what a cure is? A cure is when you no longer require mega doses of medication to maintain your blood sugar. Anyway, let me go back to the article. Here's a study right here. And just consider this in your mind, in your heart. In 1998, researchers at Sapienza University of Rome. I'm not Italian. I could have butchered that. I have some Italian friends, though. Maybe they could set me straight. They published a small human study in the International Journal of Obesity. Okay. Well, if the study got published, that means it had some good information, right? Yeah. Okay. What they did was they experimented with 20 type 2 diabetics. Now, to be in this particular study, well, you had to, you could be taking medication, but you couldn't be using insulin injections yet. Okay. So what they did was, I think they just kind of, with a roll of the dice, they kind of like arbitrarily said, okay, we're going to choose you 9 here and 11 that are going to be our placebo, or that are going to take a placebo in the control group. So they gave 9 of these 20 type 2 diabetics that weren't yet using insulin, they gave them 750 milligrams of 5-HTP. And you're probably thinking, well, how long did they give it to them for? 2 weeks. That's it. 2 weeks. They didn't take 2 months or 2 years to figure this out. They wanted to find out what would happen in 2 weeks if they just gave them 750 milligrams of 5-HTP. The subjects were allowed to eat as much as they wanted to, so nobody told them they couldn't eat whatever they wanted, right? Okay. But they kept track of exactly what they drank and what they ate. You want to hear what the results are? Okay. First part's technical, but I'll break it down for you. Supplementation with 5-HTP in the 9 individuals that took it, it reduced their energy intake from 8,088 kilojoules per day after a week down to 6,338 kilojoules per day after a week. I know that number doesn't mean anything to you. After 2 weeks supplementation, the intake even dropped a little bit more. And they said this decrease in energy intake amounts to 420 kilocalories. Well, if a pound of fat is 3,500 kilocalories, and every day you lower your intake of calories by 420, let me think. It ain't going to take long to lose a pound of fat, is it? All right. There's a whole bunch of charts and graphs on this study. You don't need to know any of that except what I'm telling. Well, maybe you do, but I can't just easily interpret it by looking at it and tell you what I'm looking at. Roughly 3/4 of the decrease in energy was due to a decrease in fat intake. And you know what? For all I know, that was just the greasy omega-6 fatty acids in French fries or onion rings, something like that. It said the remaining 25% was due to a decrease in carbohydrate consumption. Indeed, it almost sounds too good to be true. Here's the mechanism right here. This is how they think it works. And this might be a little bit much, but I think it's worthy of at least saying you have heard this at least once. They say that diabetics, if you have a condition called diabetes, the bottom line is it reduces the body's ability to convert branched-chain amino acids into energy. These are amino acids. So if you have diabetes, your body, it just doesn't do a good job of taking the good, wholesome branched chain amino acids and burning those for energy. As a result, you get this increased concentration of branched chain amino acids. So because branched chain amino acids and the amino acid tryptophan, they enter the brain via the same transportation system, and they compete with each other to cross the blood-brain barrier, the supply of tryptophan is greatly reduced in the brain in somebody who's a diabetic. Does that make sense? As a result of that, the body's production of serotonin in the brain decreases. I would imagine the gut also. So they go on to say that when you have tryptophan, then your body can make the neurotransmitter called serotonin. And they're saying in this study that serotonin was shown to act as an appetite suppressant. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you know of anyone that lives on planet Earth that might benefit from an appetite suppressant? You may not know what that means. Is there anyone that could benefit by eating less? Have you ever seen somebody just shovel food into their body? I mean, it just keeps going and going. There's no stopping. The answer is yes. It's a rhetorical question. There are a few people that could greatly benefit from an appetite suppressant. The researchers think that this is why diabetes leads to hyperphagia, which means increased appetites, because their serotonin is too low. They think that in their experiment, they have removed the hyperphagia by supplementing with 5-HTP. You get that? If you take 750 milligrams of 5-HTP, then bingo, all of a sudden you don't have this ravenous appetite. Of course, this is not true, and I know where most people are probably going with this. They're thinking, you know, can I just take an antidepressant like Zoloft? You can, but with those chemicals, usually it increases appetite. I've seen many a woman pack on 30 pounds just by starting an antidepressant, which, I mean, I don't want to get too sidetracked here, but do you know what the long-term effects are of antidepressants on the brain? It's not good ever. All of these drugs are supposed to be short-term. That's what all the studies demonstrate, until you get to the person to a good place again. So the whole purpose of a drug is to take it until you can get the blood pressure back under control by correcting and healing the body where they don't need it anymore. Does that make sense? Same is true for antidepressants. Same is true for taking prednisone. You can't take endless amounts of prednisone forever without breaking down the immune system in the body and causing other problems. I know, I talk to people all day long. There is a fantasy out there that you can take unlimited amounts of drugs and never have a price to pay. That's not true. Anyway, so back in 1998, the Italians found that if they gave 750 milligrams of 5-HTP to diabetics, type 2 diabetics, not type 1, I'm open to reading studies about that. I just hadn't come across one. So to me, that is so interesting. And so that's for your listening pleasure. Okay, here's the next article right here. What I'm going to do is I have two more studies, and then I'll go straight to the phone lines. The phone number here is 903-586-5257. This one really captured my attention, and you'll kind of figure out why when I get close to the end of it, because it says something I don't think I've seen before. So there is a substance. It's made of humic and fulvic acid, or what I should say is, I'm so sorry, when you get decomposing organic matter, it gives off fulvic and humic acid. And so if you live more in the part of the world called Asia where they have the Himalayan mountains, a lot of the local healers, they use a substance called shilajit. It's spelled J-I-T. S-H-I-L-A-G-I-T. Shilajit. It's kind of an asphalt that's mined up in the mountains, but they use it when people suffer horribly from pain and inflammation, and their joints are plumb worn out. You get where I'm coming from? You think you know anybody that might benefit from something that would help counter painful, inflamed, worn-out knee joints? Okay. Well, there was a study published in 2018 suggesting that people with worn-out joints could definitely benefit from taking shilajit. Okay. Some of these names I can't pronounce. Researchers at the Behoanar University of Kerman in Iran. Now, just because the study comes from a university in Iran doesn't make it valid. I mean, but what they're doing is they're finding natural ways to help the body heal, so I dig that. I like that study. What they did was they took a group of rats and they injected them with a chemical irritant that's known to destroy the knee joint. Okay? So instead of waiting till the rats lived to be 1 week before they died of severe old age with worn-out joints, they just injected a chemical irritant that would induce severe arthritis of the knee joint and cause wear and tear and inflammation. So you with me on that? So in this way, the Iranians, they imitated the effect of osteoarthritis, which, oh my goodness, osteoarthritis, let me think. Have I seen somebody with osteoarthritis in the last 34 years? Yeah, one or two. No, you know I'm joking about that. Another group of the rats, they didn't give them anything. They just acted as the control group. They were happy. Nobody injected a chemical to cause knee arthritis. Okay, a portion of the rats that were injected with a chemical to cause knee arthritis, they were given Shilajit. And the way they gave it to them, it was in the oral form. And they gave it to them every day for 21 days. That's the extent of the study right here, 21 days. Now, if the rats had been adult humans like you and I are, they would have taken about 1 to 1.2 grams of Shilajit daily. And so what that would mean to you and I is if you found a bottle of Shilajit that had 500 milligrams per capsule, then what does the study say? You take two of those a day, okay? Now, you got to remember, this study is only 3 weeks. I dig that. It didn't take a year to figure this out. It says the researchers made their Shilajit preparation themselves. They used a water-based extract produced from Shilajit from the region's mountains. That probably means they gave it to them in their drinking water. So it probably looked like kind of brownish water. Maybe they made what's called Shilajit tea. I just made that up, sorry. So when the rats were given Shilajit, the swelling of the joints, after they'd been injected with this chemical that caused knee arthritis, it started decreasing. Now, the graph that I'm looking at, it just kind of boggles my mind. They have, and one of the things they do is they actually measure in millimeters the knee joint diameter. You know what I mean by this. If you have an arthritic joint in your finger and you see these big honking calcium deposits on it and it's swollen, no one has to tell you it's swollen. You know it is. Or if your wrist is swollen. Or if you have a swollen knee. I think I saw a knee the other day that looked like a volleyball. It was so swollen. It was bad. And so what they did was they had the group of rats that had severe osteoarthritis or wear and tear of the knees, and they gave them Shilajit. This is the part that I don't even understand how this could happen. They showed by day 21, when they just measured the swelling or the size of the knee of these rats that were injected with a chemical to destroy their knee, at day 21, the knee was actually smaller than the control group that didn't do anything. I've never seen that before. And so you might want to pay attention to a substance called Shilajit. Yeah, here it is right here. At the end of the very last week, which would have been day 14 to day 21 of the study, the cartilage of the rats given the Shilajit was significantly better. Okay? The researchers scored the inflammation of the rat's knee joint. After 3 weeks, the scores of the animals that had been given the Shilajit were significantly better than those rats that had to do without it. The researchers didn't perform any analytical study that would reveal why the Shilajit or the mechanism of action, like how's this stuff work? And I always kind of dig that. I like knowing how things work, because if you can figure out how things work, it's so much easier to, like, you think of ways you can apply them. But here's what they think. They think the Shilajit supplementation enhances the biosynthesis of collagen in the joints, which Do you understand what I'm saying here? Yes, you can take collagen as a supplement. That can be very, very, very good and very appropriate. But when there's biosynthesis, this means your body is making exactly what it needs. There's a difference there. Do you get where I'm coming from? Okay. This is the last study right here, and then we're going to go to the phone lines. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. And this is going to be a no-brainer, but sometimes it's really helpful just to explain, you know, how these things work, because if you understand them, then you can put them into practice, right? Or if you have faith in something, maybe it's going to help you with your action. Like, how am I going to change what I'm doing to help improve myself? Okay, food that contains water helps keep you slim. Here's a part of the abstract. It was, I'll just read it to you. The more water in the food that you eat, for example, if you eat yogurt or fruit or meat or fish, the leaner you're likely to be. So when the food itself contains more water, you're most likely to be the leanest person on the planet. And the other way around, a diet consisting largely of foods that contain little water leads to obesity. Does that make sense? This is according to Japanese epidemiologists that have studied an article on the subject in the journal Nutrition. And I'm looking at a chart right here. This comes from Food Chemistry by Marcel Decker, New York, 1996. It's just a graph here of the amount of water in food. So it says that pork water content, it's about 53%. Beef, probably about 60%. Chicken, it's got about 74% water content. But this one, I kind of find it funny. If you catch fish from the ocean, it's closer to 81% water, which I kind of thought of. All right, this is just a simple comparison. Just cut me some slack on this, but have you ever seen like a really overweight cat or dog? And I already know what the answer is. The answer is yes. But it doesn't take a genius to figure out that what they're eating is usually dry dog food or dry cat food, right? Now, if they were just eating rats and mice and fish, they probably wouldn't be overweight. So you get what I'm saying here? When you eat dry stuff that's low in water, you're going to be bigger. Have you ever seen an overweight salmon? I don't think I ever have. Or squid, or octopus? An orca? I don't think so. I remember one time I went out into the Gulf and caught red snapper. I never even thought that one of those red snapper, which, talk about delicious, I never thought one of those were overweight. They're just pure muscle. Okay. When it comes to if you're probably curious, what is the water content of berries, cherries, and pears? Well, it's 80 to 85%. Apples, peaches, oranges, and grapefruit? Well, those are 90% pure water, okay? Well, if you like to eat rhubarb, strawberry, and tomatoes, well, those are closer to 95% water. So as you make choices when it comes to eating fruits and vegetables and meats that have more water content, you're going to do better. Let me see. Celery, cabbage, cauliflower, lettuce, asparagus, 95% water. Okay. Now, there is a study I came across. It says drinking water during a meal, it doesn't really help reduce caloric intake. I bet you remember the 5-HTP study I just read to you. 420 calories less. If that's true, I'm telling you, that could be like a gold mine right there. All right. But if you, and see, this is the one that I hadn't read before, but I like it. You know, if you're Japanese or Oriental, what do? You stick your finger in the water or in the rice to measure how much water to add to the rice. That's just how they do it. But there was one study where if you add more water to the rice as you're cooking your rice, then the caloric intake decreases, studies show. But to me, that kind of makes sense, because if you add more water to the rice, and the rice puffs up a little bit more and holds more water, then maybe you'll get full faster and easier. Okay. This Japanese experiment examined the relationship between body weight of a human being and the amount of water that you consume daily through drinks and through solid foods. Okay. There you go. Whatever you drink or whatever you eat, there's your water intake. They collected data on body weight and body composition of 1,200 women. So there were no men in the study. And the age group was between the age of 18 and 22, so they were all very young. And they asked them in the survey, what are you eating and what are you drinking? So the researchers calculated the amount of water the women consumed daily through solid food and also with what they would drink. And then they put them into quintiles. They divide the women. I'm not going to go through all that. That's like too wordy and too science-sounding. Okay, so they said, this is what this study shows. They said the amount of water that women consume through the drinks, it had no influence really. And of course, I'm not going to read all the details, whether they drank tea or water. But they're saying that really didn't make a big difference on their body weight. But the amount of water consumed through the food did. So the more water that was in the solid food, the leaner the women were. You think that's useful information? The researchers do not know exactly why this is so. Well, I can tell you what I think. If you consume rice that's got 50% water versus rice with 95% water, one's going to be larger and more filling, right? Or it's going to weigh more. That's one of the oldest theories about weight loss of all time. They say it's the, or when it comes to the topic of what does it take to satiate your appetite? And so, I think the old study that I looked at was where they took, maybe it was like a Happy Meal from a, maybe a Happy Meal from like a fast food restaurant. You know, you get the milkshake, you got your extra large onion rings, you got your fried apple pie, and you got your quadruple cheeseburger sitting there. You weigh that, and let's just say that weighs 3.5 pounds. Well, if you had a big bowl of soup that's mainly water, like a water or broth-based soup, and that weighs 3.5 pounds, well, bingo, there's your weight loss right there. And the reason why that's weight loss is because when you eat a big bowl of soup, it fills you up and you're satisfied. So there's a cascade of chemical reactions within your gut all the way to your brain and your physiology, and you go, oh my goodness, I'm totally satisfied. I don't need to eat anymore. So, the researchers do not know exactly how this happens, but the wetter the food, the more proteins and the less carbohydrates it contains, according to the information in the table below. I'm not going to read that, but does it make sense that if you were to eat a very large bowl of broth-based soup, you might lose weight? Or you might retrain your appetite to be satisfied, maybe a little bit better and easier. here's the easy one for me. What's the percentage of water in a cucumber? Bingo, 98%, 96% water. It says tomatoes are 94% water. You know what that means. It's mainly water. Lettuce, 96% water. Watermelon, it says it's 92% water. I thought it was 95. Celery and zucchini, 95% water. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How am I talking to you when you're talking on the radio?
Well, you got to flip the radio off.
I mean, you're still giving information.
Well, it's called a delay.
I need you to speak about osteoporosis. I've had osteopenia for many years, but now then, last week they, with the bone density study, they said I had big time osteoporosis. And I exercise and I try and watch, you know, what I eat, and so I need some help.
Do you eat onions every day?
I try. I like onions.
Well, what does I try mean?
I mean, I use it in my food. I don't...
Do you ever cook with sautéed onions?
Say that again?
Do you ever use sautéed onions in your food?
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I read an article showing that women that eat onions every single day, they absolutely have the strongest bones.
Ah, fantastic.
So, and when you cook them, it works great.
So it doesn't diminish the value when you cook them?
No, it doesn't. No, there's a sulfur compound. It's got a long name to it. But when women eat onions every day, as opposed to women that just have them either once or twice a month, they have absolutely the thickest, strongest bones of all time.
Okay. What could a person be eating that would be destroying their bones?
Well, that's called sugar.
Okay.
So anytime you consume there's a lot of moving parts with this. Like, for example, if you were taking an acid-blocking drug from, to cut down on acid indigestion, heartburn, reflux, that could do it. Prednisones and thyroid supplementation, those all can erect the bones easily. Have you had steroids or thyroid or acid blockers?
I've had the prednisone because of my fingernails were being destroyed by Tylenol, and so I had to take that, prednisone, for just a short period of time.
Okay, well, maybe if it was just a short period of time, maybe that wasn't it. But usually prednisone is really good at making the bones just collapse fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so the number one thing I'm going to try to sell you on is the idea of fat. And so if you put good fats in your body, that could be, and let me give you one example. I like that study that I read 20 years ago from a nursing home group in Pennsylvania, and all they did was they just put one pat of butter on their lima beans or on their carrots when they were served from the cafeteria at the nursing home facility. And in 1 month, 15% improvement in the absorption of nutrients. And so my sales pitch is, when you consume good, healthy fat, that enhances the absorption of minerals directly into your bones. So putting butter on your broccoli is really good. So kale is really high in minerals, especially calcium. And so is broccoli, and so is salmon. But if you put butter on those things, you'll actually extract more goodness from it, and that way it'll get to your bones.
Fantastic. I use butter from a farm, Miller's Farm in, I believe it's Pennsylvania, where he is.
Oh, that's right. Those are where the Amish live.
And yes.
They don't use Briggs & Stratton engines. They turn it by hand.
Well, I think it's fantastic because I do eat the butter. But recently I visited a chiropractor in Dallas, and he said that I needed to stop eating kale, spinach, all the green cruciferous, I think is the way he said it, because it would help the neuropathy in my feet and legs.
Excuse me? What?
Yep. That's what he said.
Okay, well, you better go with that then. That wouldn't be my recommendation, though.
Right.
Help with the neuropathy. You know what would help? Okay, I'm not trying to make a joke here. Life is precious and you're a creation of God, so you deserve great care and respect. If you start walking barefoot where your barefoot is on the grass or the dirt or the concrete every day, what you'll do is you'll start sending a signal to grow more nerve cells. And the last time I checked, if you can grow new blood vessels and new veins and new muscle and new nerves, you cure neuropathy. I know that sounds simple, but that's kind of my plan.
Absolutely.
Did the chiropractor tell you to start walking barefoot on the grass?
That I don't recall. I don't remember saying that.
What was your takeaway from your recommendation to cure the neuropathy?
Well, that's mainly what I eat as far as green vegetables are concerned. So he was taking away my diet.
Well, and you know what? If he has some great references or information on that, I would love to know what that is. But I've never heard that before. I've been doing this for 34 years. That's a new one on me. I'm open to learning.
Mm-hmm.
No, but if you want to get rid of the think of it is you got to make it easy for the body to rejuvenate itself. And so I realize what I'm telling you is not going to be super comfortable, but if you tell me you do not like the burning in your feet and the annoying symptoms in your legs, well, one of the ways through that is you're going to have to increase blood flow, and you can do that by walking barefoot for a little bit every day, maybe not all day long. But that and the other things is just body weight exercises like doing squats. Can you do that?
Yes, yes. I do those.
Okay, perfect.
I wish it were perfect. But
well, so maybe hard. Maybe we should focus on the most important things. Number one, every night when you go to bed, put on socks that are drenched in castor oil. Do that for 3 weeks. Number two, make it a point at some time during the day that you just go outside with no shoes or socks on and just walk in the grass or the dirt. I know, do you ever go hiking in your neighborhood?
Not really.
Well, next time you go hiking, about a quarter mile from the house, take your shoes off and walk it in.
Gotcha.
So something like that. But unless you put a little bit of stress on the bottom of your foot, you're never going to have a reason to grow new skin, new muscle, new bone. And your bare foot on the, your bare heel on the ground, that's going to stimulate new bone growth instantly.
Hmm.
Works like a champ.
Fantastic.
Magnesium is probably the number one player when it comes to regrowing bones from the mineral kingdom. But with osteoporosis, the only thing I've ever seen really turn that around from the calcium kingdom is a substance called calcifood.
Okay.
Now, I have an idea for you. You can replace the kale and the greens and the collards with Pop-Tarts. I hear that really does well.
I don't like Pop-Tarts. I don't even like them.
Ma'am, does that mean you're rejecting my brilliant plan?
Today, yes.
Well, can you eat salmon?
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, see, when you eat eggs and fish and salmon, stuff like that, you're making it so much easier for your body to rejuvenate.
Fantastic. I will work on that.
There you go.
And I so appreciate your advice.
You're welcome. I hope you have a great day, ma'am.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. You too.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Sorry, I double-punched the button which locked it. Now it's unlocked. Okay, if you want to join me on the radio, there is a phone line open. Y'all know I was joking about the Pop-Tarts. I'm not recommending that. What you want to do is, when you're trying to heal the body, you've got to put living foods into the body. I see people frequently that just can't come to terms with that. And I've got to let them make their own decision. If they decide that they want a bowl of Lucky Charms cereal 3 times a day because it's just chock full of vitamins and minerals and super nutritious, I got to let them do it. I can't. I have no say in the matter. If they come to me and I tell them, you're going to have to give this up if you want your kidneys to heal, it's really their responsibility. I have no say in the matter at that point. If they shut me down and say, Dr. Morgan, you had me at hello, but you lost me at the Lucky Charm cereal being bad for you. So does that sort of make sense that if you're in a, I'll tell you what pure genius is and intelligence. If you can get an individual to take care of themselves before their body's completely, in a bad shape. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I called you 3 or 4 weeks ago concerning inner ear and vertigo, and you told me what to take, and I didn't write it down.
What?
I forgot. You,
okay, there's a procedure called the half somersault procedure.
Yeah, I remembered that, but there was something I could take.
Well, let me ask you a question. You remember the half somersault. How many times have you done it?
The last time I had a little bout with vertigo, and it did work.
Okay, so what are you wanting to know exactly?
You told me something I could take. You gave me something that I could take.
Well, off the top of my head, this is what I would say. Anytime that there's a problem with vertigo, I'm trying to reduce oxalic acid, and that's going to be found in spinach, nuts, potatoes, and mushrooms. So you avoid those if you want to try to help your vertigo. Number two, I would always err on the side of trying to improve blood flow and circulation of the ear. So you've got everything from cayenne pepper. You've got a herb called ginkgo biloba. I really, really like ginkgo biloba. And actually, One of the studies that I tried to look at, but I didn't get very far through it this morning, was people that take ginkgo, they live a lot longer than those that don't take ginkgo, and I could probably extract from that that there's some reasons why they live longer. And one of those might be it greatly helps improve circulation in the body. So that's one thing you can look at. If from the mineral kingdom, I probably look to magnesium when it comes to ear problems more so than anything else, or vertigo or balance problems. And then vitamin A. Let me think. Where was I yesterday? Yesterday I was reading the article about vitamin A and the tissues and the cartilage and the bones and the joints breaking down. You've got to have vitamin A to repair and to rejuvenate. So you get vitamin A in some form when you eat carrots. And when you eat them cooked, you get more than when you eat them raw. And then if you eat sweet potatoes, that's a pretty good one also. And from the fruit kingdom, mangoes are hard to beat. Now, the best source of vitamin A of all time is not from a laboratory where a mad scientist is making it out of coal tar. It's when you eat liver and onions.
Okay, I love liver and onions. And
ginkgo, G-I-N-C-O?
G-I-N-K-O. Ginkgo.
Okay, K-O.
I may have misspelled it, but yeah, ginkgo.
What was the second part of that? You said ginkgo something.
Well, his last name is Biloba, B-I-L-B-O-A. Or B-O... Oh, my goodness. I do this every time. Okay, ginkgo is G-I-N-G-K-O.
Okay.
Biloba is B-I-L-O-B-A.
Okay.
All right.
I got that written down.
Good deal.
Okay. Thank you much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Phone line open. You can call right now if you want. 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. Good morning, and thank you so much for your phone call.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. I'm calling to find out information about tooth loss, or not tooth loss, but just teeth thinning and just not what they used to be. And I was wondering what you would recommend for that.
Now, I want to make sure that what was the first term that you used, because I didn't catch that. You wanted information about what?
Well, I said bone loss, but
bone
loss, that's
okay.
What I feel like, because my teeth are just. They're thinning, they're chipping. I use toothpaste that's for sensitivity, and I do things to, I for my gums, you know, I use mouthwash, and nothing seems to be helping to regain that enamel or whatever. So I was calling about that to see what you would suggest.
Okay, can you think of, and I'll get to that in just one second, can you think of anything that you may be doing or taking that might be contributing or causing the tooth or the dentin or enamel loss?
I cut back on drinking soft drinks, eating sweets. I kind of changed my diet to where I had read that eating a lot of sweets and stuff causes that, and I just am eating more vegetables, spinach. I'm eating things that are healthier, and I'm just not seeing any changes in my
health. Well, I'm totally proud of you. You took all the right steps. I want to say from the Baylor School of Dentistry, they did a study on cadaver teeth. These are teeth that have been removed from somebody that's passed on.
Yeah.
And they showed that the number one food, I'm sorry, it's not a food. I misrepresented that. They showed that when they gave the teeth exposure to a substance called Red Bull, that did more to destroy the teeth. It's probably like smoking crack or something like that to the teeth. It just wrecks them. And so that's what you tried to do. You tried to avoid anything with phosphoric acid in it, and that's the soda water or a Coke.
Okay.
So you've done really well. Now, as far as what do you do to help rejuvenate the teeth, well, there's several things you have to do. Number one, the reason that stuff like Red Bull and Mountain Dew and all the Coke and candy. It's also high, high acid. Mm-hmm. Acid strips the alkaline minerals from the body.
Okay.
So one of the things you're doing is you're looking at adding back minerals. One of them that I might suggest that I'm almost positive I read an article on was that asphalt, humic, and fulvic acid stuff called shilajit.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But anytime, there's a product that I've used over and over for severe cases. It's called Biodent. That's spelled B-I-O for bio, and then dent is just short for dental.
Okay.
D-E-N-T. Thought it was going to put a dent in your car. No, it's called Biodent. But it's actually made from all that tissue from the jawbone of a calf.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Not the jawbone of an ass. That's what Samson used to defeat the Philistines.
Right.
By the way, I wasn't there. I've seen the videotape of it, though. It looks pretty bad.
Okay.
He was really thirsty afterwards. I remember that part. But so when you take Biodent, this will have, I know I'm just kind of cutting to the chase and make it sound simple, but this has all the elements that go directly to the teeth.
Okay, because I'm assuming it's minerals, of course, but
it is, yeah. Well, can I tell you the other side of the coin? You've got to walk every day. It takes about 8,000 steps a day to rejuvenate the teeth.
Okay.
And so even if you take, I know I cut you off. I apologize to you. Wasn't that bad of me? Forgive me.
No.
So even if you take the Biodent, if you're not getting about 8,000 steps in a day, then you'll never get enough nutrition that passes through the gums and the teeth to be utilized.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons why when you're super, super sedentary, when I say you, I mean other people, not you,
mm-hmm.
you just can't get enough nutrition to the site. And
okay.
you've probably heard the old phrase that like cures like. So if you had a person that was, say, really having a hard time with alcohol,
mm-hmm.
and they had cirrhosis of the liver, and they had an alcoholic liver,
mm-hmm.
well, one of the cures for them is to, number one, we got to find a way to get them off alcohol, but we got to put something into them that'll help rebuild, heal, and rejuvenate this swollen, toxic, inflamed, you know, liver that's about to die.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what it's called? It's called liver.
Liver. Okay.
Yeah. Just like if somebody has had multiple heart attacks and heart problems,
mm-hmm.
we might give them calf heart. I know I'm making it sound kind of simple, but I'm telling you, the stuff's a gold mine of information.
Okay.
So
eating liver.
Yes, and it is absolutely the most nutrient dense food on the planet. And one of the, just like the previous caller, you always see problems with a person's ears or the inner ear when they're low in vitamin A. So
okay.
I'm thinking, I'm real smart when I say this, listen. Maybe vitamin A is essential for hearing and for the ear. But
right,
you've got to have vitamin A when it comes to the teeth. You just do. I have this old book that was a nutrition book from the 1950s, and all the pictures in there are black and white. There's not a color photo in there, but it just shows the raw, brutal pictures of what animals and humans look like when they're lacking one nutrient.
Okay.
So I think I looked at the one on sodium deficiency, and it shows people just kind of strung out on the road with weeping sores and wounds and crusty skin, and I'm going, I don't think I want to have a salt or sodium deficiency anytime soon. But it shows you the worst case scenario. But man, with the one with vitamin A, you have animals that are born blind and they can't hear. It's just amazing. But you got to have that for the teeth. So Biodent, that, avoiding the sugar and the acid foods, and walking a lot.
Okay. Well, my life has been, I work at home, so my life has changed in that respect. And exercise, I used to walk all the time and ride bikes. So I guess I need to increase that as well. But my teeth are just really, I mean, I can tell a huge difference. And I've been trying stuff and it's just not working. So
well, the issue is, no, and I'm glad you did call, but it's in no way do I mean to discourage you, because what I want to do is I want to point you in a direction that's going to lead to great results that makes you mm-hmm. super happy. And the thing of it is, if your teeth begin to rejuvenate, that means your bones are too.
Right, exactly.
And so your teeth are if you're losing your teeth, that means your bones are getting weak, and I want you to get stronger.
Right. Okay, so Biodent, vitamin A, I hear you often because I listen to your shows a lot. I really appreciate your advice and information that you share with us. But I always heard that liver was not, it was just not a good food to eat for us.
Well, tell me why. No, tell me why. Tell me what your thoughts are. What have you heard that liver is a bad food to eat?
I'm trying to. It was way back.
Well, can I tell you what I hear all the time?
What's that?
Here's the comment from geniuses and experts in the field of everything except reality. They say that the liver is your filter, so it pulls toxins out of the blood. Therefore, you don't want to eat it. Is that what you've heard?
No, I don't remember that one. It seemed like it was related more to diet effects, such as being not fatty, but something in that regard.
Well, the liver is a muscle.
Right.
It's mainly protein, but the liver is where you store all the nutrients in the body. So, for example, in your liver right now, you're supposed to hold about a 5-year reserve of vitamin B12.
Okay.
That means if there was a famine or a crisis and you couldn't get any animal protein rich in B12, you'd be okay because your liver has a 5-month reserve. Now, you tell me, why did God design it that way? Well, I don't know. He's a genius. That's an understatement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's why if you ask me, why do we need to be in heaven for eternity? Because it's going to take an eternity to start to see all this unfold and begin to understand who God is. It's going to take eternity. Not one day. You're not going to know it. You can't. But eternity. So, but what usually the number one hit that I get on this is liver's bad because it pulls all the toxins and the poisonous gunk out of the body, so you don't want to eat it. See, the liver detoxifies, yes, but it has no capacity to store the toxins. It can't. It's got to kick them out. That's called detoxification. Now, if you told me if you want to eat the person's gallbladder, I'd say don't do that. That's pretty toxic.
Right.
All the old doctors used to call the gallbladder the trash can of the body, so there's no, I've never seen a recipe for bile soup or a bile sandwich ever.
No.
Well, yeah, I tell you how we cure obesity. We start making bile donuts. That'll do it. You'll never eat one again.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Well, can I ask you, when you say eat liver, how much do you recommend? I mean, what's...
Well, it depends on the severity. It depends on the severity of the situation. Back at the very end of World War II, there was a Japanese Imperial Army prisoner of war camp where they held American aviators that were captured when their planes were shot down in China.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the highest amount of an autoimmune condition called myasthenia gravis they've ever seen before. These men were so weak, they couldn't even lift their arms. They were about to die. Guess what their plan was? To restore their pilots' lives. They gave them 1 pound of liver a day, 16 ounces, for 3 weeks. Every one of them came out of it. I'm never going to forget reading that because that's golden. And so even if you had liver once a week, that would be a start, but do what you can.
Okay.
Every little bit helps.
So, and you just, you're talking about, I've always had liver fried.
Well, it doesn't take much to cook it. Just like if you put salmon in a skillet, it low heat will do it. Same is true for liver. Or they sell liver pills. You can buy beef liver pills if you want to, but beef liver is the most nutrient dense.
I was about to say, I'll have to look into that.
Well, I'm wishing you well. Thank you for your phone call, ma'am.
Oh, I appreciate your help. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.